Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. In 1990, the number of murders in Boston hit an all-time high, with 152. Most of the killings were the result of a violent crack epidemic and gang-related violence that swept through inner-city neighborhoods across the country.
In Boston, it came to a head in 1992 when gang members attacked mourners at a funeral in the Morning Star Baptist Church in Mattapan. The shocking attack inside a church galvanized religious leaders in Boston to take a stand. They formed the 10-Point Coalition, an alliance of black ministers and community leaders who pledged to confront the violence head on. Among the founders was the Reverend Eugene Rivers of Dorchester.
In the immediate aftermath of the Morningstar incident, about half a dozen clergy issued the call for the 10-Point Coalition, what subsequently became the Boston 10-Point Coalition. It comes to a head with Morningstar because the established black church's refusal to engage this growing crisis of violence forced the issue.
The ministers went into the streets of Boston to convince gang members to stop the violence. And after years of mutual distrust, they established alliances with law enforcement and helped push a new approach to policing that led to a dramatic decline in the killings. By 1999, Boston recorded just 31 murders, down from 152, thanks to a strategy that became known as the Boston Miracle.
The Reverend Jeffrey Brown was among the founders of the Boston 10-Point Coalition. Last week, he announced that he plans to step down in the spring as leader of the organization that he helped create 20 years ago. Brown's departure offers a chance to reflect on what Boston has accomplished over the past 20 years, how much there is still left to do, and to ask what's the future of the 10-Point Coalition and the city's faith-based crime-fighting efforts. And Reverend Jeffrey Brown joins us now. Welcome to Radio Boston. Welcome back to Radio Boston, I should say. Reverend Brown, it's great to see you here.
It's good to see you, too.
So, first question, why are you stepping down?
Well, I think for a couple of reasons. The first reason is that I believe that it's time for a change in leadership for the Boston 10-Point Coalition. It's time to allow those who have been involved in this work and who are younger to come up and to express themselves in leadership. And then the second piece is that there is a growing national movement now of faith-based groups who are committed to doing the kinds of efforts that are similar to Boston 10 Point. And you have municipalities and police departments that are willing to partner with them. And they need help. They need help putting it together. They need help trying to figure out how to build those relationships. They need help in terms of strategies. And I've been finding myself increasingly working with those groups and increasingly out of town. And so it got to a point where I had to make a decision, either stay with Boston or really be of service to this national movement. And so I chose the latter.
Well, there's a lot I want to talk to you about, including this national mm-hmm. This national movement. I also want to talk about the next generation of leadership. But before we do that, I want to look back a little bit about sort of what we've accomplished, what this city has accomplished, I should say, in the last 20 years. We talked about those terrible years in the early 90s mm-hmm. when Boston saw a record number of murders. The 10-Point Coalition was involved in a big way that involved Boston police, the parole department, state police, a whole bunch of others to really go after the gang problem. Mm-hmm. How do you describe what happened back then that was so successful, that became known as the Boston Miracle? What happened?
I know the label has been the Boston Miracle, but I really believe that it wasn't really anything miraculous about it, except for the fact that you had adults coming together and doing business differently. You had clergy who came out of the four walls of their sanctuaries and met the youth where they were. You had police departments committed to doing community policing and partnering with the community, such as clergy. And the same with probation and some of the other law enforcement officials. And then the city itself came together with their services in a coordinated multi-stakeholder stakeholder approach. And if there was anything miraculous, it was really the adults making the decision to do that and working with the youth. And I think the most important piece of that was that you had youth and families that were at the street level who were really unheard and disenfranchised, and you had groups reaching out and saying, you know, we're with you on this, you know, this is our city and we have to do something to reduce the violence. Mm.
And I want to, one of the things, we spent some time on this program as talking about some of the law enforcement approaches that really help to bring the violence down. And I'm referring to ideas like Operation Ceasefire, mm-hmm. where there was a real effort to target the few sort of bad apples in the sort of gang-related world and really go after those people in a concerted way, mm-hmm. and really make a difference. And that involved, obviously, your efforts in reaching out to these folks. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of effective community-based policing with the cooperation of community members like yourself and the other folks in the 10-Point Coalition, is that still working as effectively in Boston as it should be, as it needs to be?
I think that there is room for improvement around that process, mm-hmm. but I think more or less in the city of Boston, we still have the collaborations and the willingness to partner together and to find ways to creatively mine solutions mm-hmm. That would see some measurable results. I think we suffer in Boston from the embarrassment of riches. We've had a proliferation of nonprofits throughout the community who have committed themselves to, improve the lives of the least, the lost, and the left out. Many of them are faith-based. Many of them are community-based. You have those who are in policing. You have the leadership that is committed, and you have the district captains that are also committed. They attend meetings. They share information. They support those efforts. And you have many, many more churches that are out in the streets, walking, coming up with creative solutions. So it's a real, you know, wonderful process that we have here. But the violence continues to be persistent. We have low rates. Mm-hmm. If you think of Anthony Braga, who is Harvard and Rutgers professor who does all the number crunching around this, he'll tell you that when the homicide rate gets into the 50s in Boston, we're really experiencing the low end of the scale, and we're getting into where we want to be. But as far as I'm concerned, 50 homicides are 50 homicides too many. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't be focusing now on keeping the violence low. We should be focusing on turning around this culture of violence that seems to persistently plague us. And because of its persistence, we will continue to see homicides in the city.
Well, looking at that current murder rate, it's a long way, of course, from the 152 murders in 1990. There were 62 murders in Boston in 2011, 58 last year. But of course, most of the murders happen in a small, relatively small part of the city, Area B, Area C, Roxbury, Mattapan, Dorchester. Is there a danger that we look at these numbers and think, well, gee, the murder rate's going down, we're doing okay? Yeah. In other words, is there a danger, a little bit of resting on our laurels while, as you say, murders continue, specifically in particular parts of the city?
It's absolutely a danger in that. When we look at homicides in the communities of color, because those neighborhoods that you're speaking are largely the communities of color, you see that reflected in the national statistics as well. Nationally, crime is down, homicides are down, but in those concentrated areas, in those communities of colors, in Los Angeles and Chicago and Detroit and Atlanta and here in Boston, they continue to be persistent and continue to plague the entire community in this atmosphere of violence. So as we look at how we should approach violence, we shouldn't look at it as, well, we've got it contained in a particular area. This is a culture. It is something that hits all of our kids, and whether it manifests itself in handgun violence in the inner cities or you have tragedies like Newtown, Connecticut, or Aurora, Colorado, or Columbine, et cetera. That mentality is a consistent line. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is something that plagues all of our young people. You ask your average young person, do we live in a culture of violence? And almost to a person, they will tell you yes, mm-hmm. whether you're in the inner cities, whether you're in the suburbs, whether you're in the rural hamlets.
Mm. So what's missing then? We talk about a need to sort of change a culture around this, or sort of the conversation or the awareness of this culture of violence. How do we do that?
I think there's a need to change the attitude around how we resolve simple conflicts and simple disputes. Mm-hmm. I think for communities of color, especially for communities of color, the crack epidemic has changed the equation in a drastic way in our communities. And I think you have this mentality that has sort of set in because of, you know, such things as the breakdown of the family and, you know, the social and economic structures being weaker. You have this notion that if you bump into me, you know, in a club, then I have the right, or I have, the opportunity to shoot and kill you. Mm. Or if I step on your sneaker in a high school hallway, or you're from a particular neighborhood, even though you're walking to church, you know, that I have this, you know, right to shoot you. And what we need to do is to begin to change that attitude. Right now, what I see in Boston is that you have that next generation that's beginning to emerge, and we have to impact that generation. So one of it is the collaborative work that we continue to do. The other piece has to be some kind of public campaign. I mean, we've done it before nationally with smoking. We were able through, public service announcements and advertising, et cetera, to change the attitude around smoking itself so that we can, you know, better handle that and have a healthier community. We need to do the same thing around violence.
Listeners, we're talking to Reverend Jeffrey Brown. He's the leader of the Boston 10-Point Coalition, who will be stepping down in the spring. What questions do you have about Boston's efforts to reduce violence in the future of the city's faith-based crime-fighting efforts? Is it time for another Boston miracle? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And let me introduce another voice into this conversation. Jeffrey Brown, you were talking about the next generation. Rufus Falk is program director of the Gang Mediation and Intervention Initiative for the 10-Point Coalition. He was born and raised in Roxbury. He's been with the 10-Point Coalition for 8 years, doing a lot of work on the front lines of this cause. And Rufus Falk, thanks for coming back to Radio Boston. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
I'd love to talk to you about sort of the legacy of the 10-Point Coalition and some of the successes of the past. But in your view, as someone who deals with the challenges today, where are we today? What are the challenges on the streets today? I mean, how would you characterize them?
That's a great question. I think if you look at how Boston is today, We clearly are experiencing some lows of violence. Shootings are reduced. Homicides are reduced. But like you said previously, homicides are still being concentrated in certain neighborhoods within our city of Boston. And I think the first thing we have to do, we have to make sure that this is a city issue. It isn't a Roxbury issue. Mm-hmm. It isn't a Dorchester issue. It isn't a Mattapan issue. It's a city of Boston issue. And I think, unfortunately, it's being characterized as simply a Roxbury issue. When a homicide happens on Humboldt Ave, it affects the entire city. And we need to start looking at it as so. Again, we have a lot of young people who are, like Reverend Brown said previously, are caught in this culture of violence that we have, this culture of retaliatory gang violence. And what we try to do at the Boston 10-Point Coalition is try to offer some tangible examples of how to successfully navigate outside of that destructive cycle. So, again, someone like myself who's from the neighborhood, from Roxbury, when I try to give a young person some insight on how to do it, I'm doing it from experience. A lot of times we have people who try to give kid advice, give our young people advice without having experience some of the successes and some of the pitfalls. So it's easy to preach, but if you haven't practiced what you preach, some of your messaging goes to the wayside. So what we try to do, we try to get people from varieties of walks of life to impart some knowledge and insight to our to our youth living in the city of Boston.
And let me ask you sort of how the violence has changed, if it has changed. Back in the 90s, it was all about the crack trade, protecting turf. But now I'm hearing stories about a real sort of paradigm shift, less about the business of crack, more about stick-ups, home invasions, kidnappings, really a new level of violence. Has it changed, and does that require new approaches to dealing with the violence?
I think we definitely need new approaches, but I think it's a dangerous game to start to quantify the levels of violence. Mm-hmm. Stick-ups, robberies, home invasions were happening in the 90s. They were happening in the 80s. Mm-hmm. I think largely the only difference now, our perpetrators are a lot younger, and they are a lot less organized than they were in the 80s and the 90s, which makes a lot of these shootings even more heartbreaking when you have 15, 14-year-old kids who are perpetrating crimes and also being the victims of crimes. I think we definitely need new approaches. I think we need to get back to but we also need to remember what we did successfully in the 90s. We had fully funded community centers. We had advanced work classes in our middle schools, mm-hmm. who were actually preparing kids academically to be successful.
So there are fewer of those kinds of services and facilities today?
I think we've had community centers, but now you're charging $100 per kid. When I was going to the Boys and Club, Girls Club, it was $5 for the whole year, mm-hmm. so it was more accessible. We had programming for every youth in the city of Boston, in Roxbury, not just the youth who come from middle-income families. So when I was going to the Boys Club, you had guys who were single homes, or you had kids who came from two-parent households, all receiving the same services, okay. all receiving the same support. I think we need to get back to that.
Reverend Brown, I'd love to get you to chime in on that as well. This sounds like a diminution of effort, of resources, of commitment to this problem in the city.
There's clearly been a diminishing of those resources. Part of it is because the entire nation has been hit with this terrible economic downturn, and so people have been trying and struggling to tighten up their belts. You have nonprofits, a proliferation of them in the city, but you have a lot of them closing their doors or cutting staff and, you know, laying off people. And Boston 10 Point is among them, you know, dealing with those particular issues. And so you have to do more with less. One of the advantages I think we've had in Boston is that we've had a political leadership that's committed to doing this work, and the mayor, you know, has always been behind, you know, these kinds of efforts. But when you don't have the money and the resources to move this forward, you know, it gets to be very difficult.
Let's take a couple of calls. Listeners, we're talking to the Reverend Jeffrey Brown, the leader of the 10-Point Coalition. He'll be stepping down. And Rufus Falk, he's Program Director, Gang Mediation and Intervention at the 10-Point Coalition. Let's go to Casimir, who's calling from Medford. Hi, Casimir, you're on the air.
Hi. Hello. Good afternoon. Hello, Reverend and everyone. You know, I appreciate the opportunity to be, to put my comments. So here's my thoughts. I'm now a resident in Medford, but I went to high school in Hyde Park and lived in Dorchester for many years, and now I work in Cambridge. And many of my friends who, you know, I now see, you know, whether it's in downtown Boston or somewhere out there, you know, and they are, you know, some of them are, you know, or tension, and they trying to better their life. And I said, oh, you know, what are you doing to, you know, get yourself back together? They said, well, I can't do anything. You know, everywhere I go, there seems to be a block. It's like being stuck in the ceiling and not being able to go anywhere because of their records or of, you know, something minor that they did while they were in high school or, you know, and my question to the city and or anyone that's listening is, what are we willing to do for those who wants to change but are, you know, stuck under that ceiling?
Sure, Casimir, you know? it's a great point. People, Reverend Brown, people who are willing to sort of put their past behind them and make a change. Casimir is talking about a bit of a roadblock there.
Absolutely. I mean, it's persistent. We have done a lot of work around core reform laws here in Massachusetts, and with some great success that's been celebrated. But the reality still exists that if you have a record or if you've turned your life around, you're liable to to run into some roadblocks around education and just, you know, struggling to get your GED, around securing a job because the job market is so devastated these days. And so there are some difficult blocks. I think in terms of job skills and retraining, I think we need to have more programs that sort of deal with that. There are programs around. People need to be informed about those particular programs so that they can take advantage of those programs. A lot of times it's a lack of knowledge that stops someone. And I also think that our social institutions need to step up to the plate. I do think that churches need to step up to the plate more. You know, they're out walking, at least the ones who are connected to the Boston 10-Point Coalition, but you've got droves of young people who are in need of services and help, and we've got 800 churches in the city of Boston. There has to be some way in which we can marshal the resources of those.
See, I'm struck by this because, if and correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the sort of inspirations for setting up this 10-Point Coalition, we heard that clip at the top of the segment from Reverend Eugene Rivers, was this idea back in the day that the churches weren't stepping up and it was time to get the churches to step up. It sounds like you're saying still more progress is needed in that area.
Absolutely. I mean, as I said previously, with 800 churches, the Boston 10-Point Coalition has a membership of 62 churches, which is good for an organization, but we're looking to end the era of violence in our community, not just to keep violence down, not to manage violence in certain neighborhoods. We're looking to eliminate the dominance of violence among our young people. And so in order to do that, we need more.
Let's go to Brendan, who's calling from Roxbury. Hi, Brendan, you're on the air.
Hi. First of all, I'd like to thank everybody for their tremendous work. I'm a worker who works with gang-involved youth in Boston for a Boston-based organization, and I'm very familiar with your work, so I just first want to thank you. One of the things that I just wanted to mention and bring up is just one of the things I've seen just sort of being on the ground level is that there's been a lot of money misspent. You know, there's a lot of money to go around. I think you mentioned it earlier about, you know, it's a lot of nonprofits, a lot of private foundations. And one of the things that's been tragic for me to see is, I think, you know, I see stuff like spending money on advertising for the buses or MBTA, and it's like that money, I think, could have been spent so much better on a direct worker or a direct employee. I know so many kids who could have received a job that didn't, and they don't have a Facebook page that the ad is directing them to or something of that nature. So I just wanted to comment and just
Well, Brendan, let me get Reverend Brown and Rufus Falk to respond to that. Reverend Brown.
Sure. I mean, I'll start. I mean, the Season of Peace campaign that we run every year, I mean, he might be talking about the advertisements that we have on the MBTA buses. All of that is donated. We don't spend a dime on the advertising from the buses. But what we do spend our money on is ways in which we can, bring resources to youth, get resources to youth, get people to help them to get pointed towards resources. So we try to spend our money, you know, in the right way. But I do hear the caller because there are some, you know, organizations that may not be spending the money in the correct way.
And, well, yeah, go ahead.
And I was just going to say, Brendan, I definitely understand where you're coming from. It does get frustrating when you're doing work on the ground and you feel like you have a lack of resources, a lack of support, and you see money being spent in ways that you feel like shouldn't be spent. But I think this is when we have people who are on the ground need to speak up and actually make suggestions to leadership and let them know, okay, this is how I feel like this money should be allocated, and here's why. This is when people on the ground have to step up. Do on the ground, we have to step up and actually start to lay out some plans and policies that you think would be effective with the money that's being spent. So again, I just encourage you, if you see or you can think of new ways to try to develop new programming that would be more cost effective, I think you should step up and make those claims and
Brendan, thanks for bringing that point up. Rufus, let me stick with you and ask you this question. You know, Reverend Brown was talking about it's time for a new generation to sort of assert itself and take over leadership of organizations like the 10-Point Coalition. I have a feeling that he was referring to folks like you. You're it. You're the next generation. Is the leadership there? Do you feel confident about when people like Reverend Brown sort of move on? Is the next generation in place to provide the leadership that's needed?
I believe the next generation leadership is in place, but I believe that we have to be empowered to do so. Unfortunately, the city of Boston, like many cities, has problems with transitional leadership. Mm-hmm. So people get in positions and don't think about transition plans or contingency plans for what happens next. But luckily enough, I was had the blessing to work with people like Chris Sumner, work with people like Reverend Hammond, Pastor Brown, who actually gave me all the reins necessary to go out there and try to develop ideas and try to step up and be a more vocal and visual leader within the city of Boston and within the Boston 10-Point Coalition. So again, I think the leadership is there, but we have to, those of us who want to be in those positions of leadership have to step up and actually take those opportunities. We can't sit and wait for them. We have to step up and again, just make ourselves available, but also we can't complain from the sidelines. You got to step up and speak out.
Hey, and I'm not an old horse being put out to pasture here.
Yeah, we got the shotgun ready for you.
Yeah. Come on now.
But let me give you the last word, Reverend Brown, just that idea about the next generation. And I'll put the same question to you. You said it's time for the next generation. Is it able to take those reins and really provide the leadership that's needed?
I think it's there. It's clearly, you know, within the Boston 10-Point Coalition, we have Rufus Falk, who I think is an outstanding example. We have the Reverend Wayne Daly, another young minister who's been at the front lines on the trenches. And there are many other young people who are out there, you know, committed to doing this work. And so I'm confident, you know, as I move forward towards my more national work, that Boston will be in good hands.
Well, Reverend Jeffrey Brown, co-founder and the soon-to-be-departing executive director of the 10-Point Coalition, thanks for all the great work you've done over many years. Thanks for coming in today and talking about it with us.
Thanks a lot, Anthony. I appreciate it.
And Rufus Falk, program director at Gang Mediation and Intervention at the 10-Point Coalition. Rufus Falk, thanks for coming in and good luck to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We appreciate it.
Today was a conversation all about the future of Greater Boston at a lot of levels, so we want to hear from you about what you think about this great city going forward. So send us a comment at facebook.com/radioboston or at our website, radioboston.org. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at boston.com. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.